Hello, everyone. And how would you like to lower your age by 25 years? Hands up, who would be interested in doing that? Well, my next guest is going to tell us a story about just exactly how you can do that. I'm going to bring on to this podcast, the Life Masterclass podcast series, David Goulet, who I met several years ago. And as with these podcasts, I'm a huge fan about health healing, you know, raising every part of our life so we can have the fullest expression of our life. So I'm really excited to bring David into this conversation because he's been doing this stuff for a lot longer than me. In fact, you're going to find out that he kicked off his journey about the same time that I was, like, mum and dad were doing the crazy thing. So I met David several years ago. So for those that don't know, I was involved in a yoga centre, a co-owner in a yoga centre in Bali called The Practice, founded by Octavio Salvado. So I was involved with that for about 5 years. And Octavio was actually a student of David's for several years. So we brought out David to The Practice, and David ran a couple of workshops, and I've got to hear a lot of David's story and see his work in action. And one of the things for me on a very personal note is I've always loved telling the story about, you know, David being in his early 70s and having the vitality of a 35-year-old and sleeping minimum hours and, like, having this vibrant health and overcoming any hiccups in the health department within sort of 24 hours or less. So I've seen that firsthand. So, you know, I look to David as a role model, and I certainly say to people, if you're sick, you need to check out this guy who's based over in Thailand in Koh Phangan with his pyramid yoga. Jump on whatever you need to jump on, make your way over there and spend some time with David, because he's done some miraculous stuff with people. So I'll introduce David, or let David introduce his story. We tried a podcast several weeks ago, but we had some technical issues. So we're having another crack at this. David's going to do the shortened version of his story, because his story is a big one. Yeah. And if you want to listen to the story... What's that?
It's 50 years long.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to hear the longer version, I'll put a link in the show notes to a YouTube video that David's recently done, where he can talk a little bit more about stuff like giving birth to babies, or, like, you know, helping with the birthing process. He can talk about how he didn't do the money thing for several years and go into some of those stories. So, David, thank you so much for joining us. If you can just give us a little bit of a background on how you came into your experience in this, you know, and you took the yogic pathway. So, tell us.
Okay. In brief, as brief as I can be about it, back in the 60s, I was working in legal surveys, from civil engineering into legal surveys. And, you know, I was all set with the great career and everything. But it didn't seem to have any excitement in it. It was just the same boring job, although I was working my way up the ladder and writing exams and all that. I simply got bored with it. I wanted to find out kind of the purpose of life. Why am I here? What am I doing? There's got to be something more than this. And so I set off on a journey to discover kind of the purpose and to just to explore life. And people at that time thought I was crazy, because not that many people were just dropping their whole career and going on a one-way ticket around the world. So anyway, I had started yoga at the same time, and then met a fellow who thought he was hitchhiking. I picked him up, and he told me, after hearing that I was dropping out and going traveling around the world, he says, I know a trip you'd be interested in. I think I already told you this little bit of the story. Yeah. And he gave me a little pink pill. It was called strawberry acid, which made me see life in a completely different way. All of a sudden, I could see the energy world, which I had been reading about. I was a fan of Albert Einstein and the theory of relativity, and quantum physics hadn't quite been developed or invented yet as such, but relativity was there. And it was talking about energy. Energy being the base of everything. And this, I was curious, what does this mean? And with this little psychedelic journey, I saw energy. I saw that everything was made of vibrating energy. This was a mind-blowing vision, perception that I just literally, as the term of Nozay's was blow your mind away.
Yeah.
Still a term people use. Your mind is out of the way and your consciousness is seeing something that you've never seen before, because mind interferes with direct perception. This is a big concept in yoga. At that point, I decided I was headed towards Japan for Expo 70, because I had been to Expo 67 in Montreal, and that was a mind-opening, visionary experience. I said, okay, I'm going to go explore the world. That's kind of what made me, inspired me to leave in the first place. Anyway, Expo 70 Japan was the destination, and it changed. I'm going to India to find out about brain chemistry. Mm. How can your consciousness all of a sudden see things that it has never seen before when you're looking at the same thing that you've been looking at? So that was my motivation, was to get into consciousness and the expansion of mind, the changes of mind. And I met a brilliant guru teacher, a yogi, when I got to India, who had been studied. He was also a medical doctor and spoke fluent English and gave a very scientific approach to yoga, explaining everything about the physiology, the brain, the chemistry of brain and body, and how to tune things up and how to make things healthy. Having been in the medical field for years, he says the Western medical system doesn't actually work. So he went back to India to open a yoga school in his mid-60s, and that's where I met him. And one of his base lines that he would repeat many times is that there is no such thing as an incurable disease. And he was teaching us how to make the body healthy. It wasn't my focus. You know, I was into the mind thing and getting into a higher state of consciousness, which I also learned at the same time. But in that process, I learned that you need to have a very healthy body to support that state of mind. Because if your body's not healthy, your mind is going to go into the aches and pains and the suffering of the body. So in yoga, you need to tune up the body, make it physically fit, and then you can go into the mind states, meditational states, and beyond the body states, consciousness liberated from your body, flying around the universe, which is all really fascinating stuff. That's really my bigger interest. But in the health field, I discovered well, you can actually be quite healthy. I kind of was already anyway. But as I started teaching yoga some years later, I met people who came after the class and said, well, my doctor just told me I have breast cancer and they need to cut off my breast and a whole bunch of lymph nodes out of this side of my body. And I was regurgitating Swami Gitananda's little statement, hey, there's no such thing as an incurable disease. I've never dealt with this before. I was healthy and I was teaching people how to be healthier. But I said, okay, let's just skip the operation. They want you in on Wednesday, but why don't you come to my place for 2 weeks and we'll do these breathing techniques and postures and movements and a specific, really clean diet that helps your immune system get better. So we did that and the cancer disappeared. She went back to a different doctor in a different province, actually in Canada, had herself tested. Hey, no sign of cancer. And that went on for years. But in the meantime, I realized, well, shit, that was easy.
Yeah.
And so years later, I did the same kind of thing with my mother, who was dying of cancer. And they gave her 7 days to live. Terminal cancer was from her breast right into her lungs. Her lungs were full of cancer cells. And so I said, hey, listen, Mom, if you don't feel like dying right away, why don't we come and do something else? To that point, she had been resistant because she was a born-again Christian, and they teach you that yoga is something from the devil. Yeah. I said, you know, you know that I'm not from the devil because I came from you. So anyway, she agreed to took her, yanked her out of the hospital, went to her place. I spent a week with her and taught her these breathing techniques. And every day her breathing improved and got better and better and better until she was up out of bed. She was bedridden in the hospital, couldn't stand up or anything. So in 7 days, she was up and around making me breakfast and really happy to be alive and feeling so great. And all her friends, the born-again Christians, all saying, "My God, it's a miracle. Praise the Lord." I said, okay, you don't want to know how to make this miracle happen. Anyway, that was an amazing success story that turned a lot of heads and you know, a few jaws dropped down. This is miraculous. Someone who was on her deathbed, dying with 7 days, and all of a sudden she's bouncing around, going for trips to Hawaii, etc. So I had experience like that. This was the second major experience. And then I dealt with brain tumors with people. And I designed this program called the Cancer Remission Program because I was always dealing with cancer. And through multiple successes and seeing, okay, this is very doable. And you can do it with virtually anyone who's willing to change their diet and how they're breathing and willing to do the work. I don't heal them. I'm just teaching them how to heal themselves. Mm. So that was how it began. And, you know, I've done a lot and people have come here for healing programs, et cetera, and it's great. And I've actually just teamed up with a medical doctor from Turkey who's also working with cancer people. And she's really excited about working with me and doing it here and kind of revamping. Now that the COVID thing is a little more relaxed and people can fly in and out more easily, people can come in and do this. I haven't really done anything the last few years, partly because of this shutdown and whatnot. So in this learning of dealing with one of the deadliest diseases, I realized, well, if the deadliest diseases everybody's afraid of can just be go into remission in a few weeks, then so can other things. So I've also dealt with multiple sclerosis and a few other diseases that are ALS also. Diseases that are not so immediately life-threatening, but it's a downhill spiral until you die. Mm. You simply go down. Mm. And I've seen that go into remission too. You can reverse these things. And one of the keys, which I learned from Swami Gitananda, Dr. Swami Gitananda, was the art of breathing. And in later years, you know, even after some of these success stories, I did more research and found out that Dr. Otto Warburg in 1930 got a Nobel Prize in medicine for discovering that cancer cells don't live in a high oxygen environment. Mm. This is swept under the carpet. Why don't people know this? We're not educated to be healthy. We're educated to be diseased. And that's how the economics of the world is running, especially today.
Yeah.
So anyway, that with my experience of teaching people how to breathe and seeing cancer go into remission, et cetera, it all made me realize the importance of breathing deep. And then consider most people are only breathing with 1/10 of their lungs. If you just double that to 2/10, you're going to make a significant difference in your health. And in studies of biology, every cell in your body, you have 50 trillion cells in your body. They all run on oxygen. Mm. Virtually every little chemical reaction that's happening in the cells, and there's millions. They all need oxygen all the time. So if you're only giving your body 1/10 of what your lungs are designed to give, of course, many of these cells are going to be deficient in oxygen, and they're the ones that mutate, change. They actually change inside the cell. There's a little machinery called the mitochondria. And this is where your cell is making energy, usually with oxygen and carbohydrates. Well, cancer cells, because they can't find the oxygen, they mutate this little part and start burning sugar instead of oxygen. So when you have enough sugar, and everybody has a lot of sugar in their diet, and you don't have the oxygen, the cell mutates. And because it has mutated, it's no longer following the healthy path of the other cells that are cooperating with the body system. They're just growing and realizing, hey, we can do what we want. will just grow and make tumors and keep growing and proliferating. They're simply out of control. But as soon as you change the oxygen level, that changes.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like a no-brainer, isn't it? If oxygen is the energy source for our body and we run on energy and we run better with more energy, if we increase that, we're going to like increase our health. I was going to say this, I'm curious to know what you found in your experience to be the things that reduce, you mentioned there that we sort of use about 10%. What are the practical things that contribute to most people only drawing a fraction of their capability when it comes to sucking in a breath?
I would go to programming schools. If you look at young children playing and running around and look at how they're breathing, they're usually above 50%. And when they're actually running, it goes up to 90%. But when you sit them down in school, that stops. And there's an automatic reaction in our body. We're designed to be, we're self-programmed, let's say. We have these programs where when your oxygen level falls too low, the heart starts beating faster and you start breathing more deeply. And when you're moving, this is an automatic thing. Your body is putting out little signals called neuropeptides that are demanding more oxygen. And then your lungs get more full and you're distributing the oxygen with a circulatory system that's very functional. And this is automatic. But when you stop the movement and your brain cells are still using the oxygen, you're going into deficit. You don't have the same reaction. When your muscle cells are demanding oxygen, your lungs are going to start breathing more deeply. This is an automatic program. But when the same thing is happening with your brain is using all the oxygen, you don't get the reaction. Mm. So you go into this deficit. Your body organs are all suffocating. Your brain is using up all the oxygen because you're trying to figure things out, but you're not replenishing it. So this creates a negative, an oxygen deficient state. And most people have jobs that are not moving anymore. Mm. Mm. We're moving our fingers. This is the extent, you know, and for hours we're sitting here, not moving, breathing with one tenth or even less. And so we end up with virtually it's a sick society. Everybody's got something. You know, we've got pandemics, from epidemics to pandemics. And I mean, even the cancer thing is really an epidemic proportion. Quite call it a pandemic at this point, but really it is. The number of people who have cancer outnumber the number of people who had COVID. And they're dying.
So lifestyle wise, so we learn these bad habits as we're kids, we're settled down, stuffed down, like movement and that sort of stuff. What other stuff do you need to undo that people might have built habits? Like I was, things that came to mind might be postural. Like even, like I'm thinking, you know, the posture of people looking at their stuff. Just crunches everything.
Definitely. That posture is compressing your lungs. So that 10% goes even lower than 10% because your lungs, to try and expand them is an effort to lift up your body, and people don't do that. They just keep sinking further and further. And you can see it in the posture that when they're walking around afterwards, they're still hunched over, kind of with a bent spine, and the lungs are restricted. We cannot expand to full capacity. So in yoga, you learn to really do the postures and the movements that expand your chest and allow your lungs the room and the space to fill up, which most people don't even have that.
That's the challenge. A lot of people's perception of yoga is, oh, it's about flexibility. I'm not flexible, so it's not the game for me. And I'm like, It's about breathing. It's about doing these things to open this up.
I mean, the flexibility is one aspect, but it's a limited aspect. And I even look at the common way of doing yoga is towards that flexibility. And even if you become more flexible, but you're not breathing and bringing oxygen back into all your internal organs, they're still suffocating. and even go to the watch people at the gym who are working their muscles like hell. But while their muscles are getting all the blood and all the oxygen, their pancreas and their liver and their everything is going down.
Yeah.
It's not really long-term health.
So the other question was about the mental aspects on the physical. So, you know, maybe the stress of something caused us to contract. What's been your experience on that, and what methodologies do you use to combat that or reverse that experience?
Well, the stress level of most people in their normal jobs or in their schools is pretty high.
Yeah.
Trying to accomplish something, you're stressed, and meanwhile, your body is suffocating. And stress is something that your body contributes to. The cells in your body, if they're not getting the oxygen they need, they put out panic signals in forms of body chemistry, neuropeptides. Mm-hmm. And these signals are saying, we are suffocating. And you start feeling that, because this body chemistry is what you feel as emotion. You start feeling stressed, you start feeling anxiety, and you start feeling like, I can't get my breath. This is a cause of asthma. But many people have borderline asthma anyway. They're not breathing well. They're not exhaling the CO2 that their cells are producing because their brains are working so hard, not getting the oxygen. So stress level, this is known in medicine. Stress is one of the underlying causes of many diseases. If you're in a stressed situation, your autoimmune system is dysfunctional. So you need to relax. I mean, in medicine, you relax. You go to hospital, you lie in a bed. You're relaxing so the healing can take place. So if you can learn to relax that stress, then you will feel better. You will be healthier. But even people going to a standard yoga class, at least they are discharging some of their stress, because that goes into the tightness, the stiffness, and the lack of flexibility as a result. So if you increase your flexibility, you're at least decreasing some of your stress. But then you go back to work and the stress comes all back up and your boss is looking at you or whatever. If you have a boss, I prefer not to have such a thing.
We could take this conversation lots of different directions, like as you slip into that, like looking at the allopathic and the medical system in general, and, you know, the most of that is around treating symptoms as opposed to fortifying the body and working from the inside out. One of the things that's drawn me to David's work, and certainly, you know, Octavia, who's followed a lot of the teachings of David, is about doing yoga that is less about power yoga, looking good, busting Insta moves and that sort of thing, and getting back to the real essence of yoga. So what would you say like constitutes a good quality yoga session, yoga practice? I've talked about this before with my audience, but I'd be interested to see what you think sort of encapsulates a good yoga class so someone can discern, yeah, this is good yoga that's actually going to help. And, you know, we're talking about health and healing here, and also, what's the name, expanded consciousness. So if you could talk on that, that'd be cool.
The connection of breath to movement. When they think, people think of the posture and holding this posture or getting into the posture. But as you're going from one posture to the other, or as I teach it, you're going into the posture and back out, up to your flexibility extent and then coming back. And I deal a lot with movement that is the torso. Moving your torso and you're not so much, your limbs can move too, but if you're not getting the motion in the central torso here, where, let me turn the camera down a little bit.
Gotcha.
You know, this whole section, this is where all your internal organs are. And if you have movement there, then you got better circulation in this area and you're breathing deeply. So that circulation is bringing oxygen to the essential organs that maintain everything in your body, including the muscles.
Mm.
So it's really important to have movement with breath. This is the key thing. And it doesn't need to be complicated movements. It can be simply moving your torso back and forth, doing some twists, but you're incorporating the breath as you do it. Like that. And when you get into the practice of this, it becomes a habit. And you naturally start breathing more deeply every time you move, which is going back to our original program.
Yeah.
Movement stimulates deeper breathing.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get into this, you realize, well, I feel really good. I feel excellent, in fact. And it maintains the vitality of all the internal organs. And that's where your vitality stays up at this higher level. And you can maintain that indefinitely. I'm on a mission of showing how you can do this. And as you know, as I did this telomere test. So I had to go and see a doctor, Dr. T down here has a clinic. Because I looked it up, and in Bangkok, they got laboratories that do DNA testing. And telomere DNA testing is the little wrapping at the end of the DNA. And when that unravels as you grow older, so they use that to measure your age, your biological age. And I told this doctor, you know, I feel like I'm still a young man. I got all my vitality. My girlfriend's 32, and she can't keep up with me. So how do you associate this to my age, which is supposed to be 73? So, and then I said, I'd like to do some telomere testing. So yeah, he said he agreed. And he says, let's find out how old you really are. So he took some blood samples, sent it in Bangkok. And then about 10 days later, he sends me a message about the results. Says, David, you're a very young man. And he sends me the copy of the document that says, actually, I'm biologically 48 instead of 73. That's 25 years knocked off. And I know that because I don't feel any different than when I was in my 30s and 40s. I mean, yeah. Where's the aging process?
Yeah.
And I look around at other people who are my age. Jesus, they're in bad shape. Some of them, a lot of them are dead, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're suffering, and they got this and they got that, and some in wheelchairs. It's like, it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
If you do simply, you can be sitting in a chair and doing deep breathing, doing limited movements, and increase your vitality and replenish what I say, the internal glands and organs that keep you alive are the most important. Doesn't matter if you're flexibility, if you can't touch your toes, if you can bend your torso, if your spine remains flexible, this is really, it's crucial in all forms of yoga. The spine is considered, this is central.
Yeah.
And it's where your brain is going down through the nerves into your body. It's the mind-body connection.
Yeah. What do you say when people get connected or attached to the idea, it's, oh, they've got good genes. That's, you know, why they're like, you know, aging well, or that's why this is happening or that's happening. What's your take, and again, this can be a pretty big subject, on genes versus, well, we can talk about epigenetics as well. So.
Right, well, the whole epigenetic thing is, again, it's a new idea in the genetic world. And then Bruce Lipton's the one who brings that up to the surface and realizing that your genes are a result of your programming, essentially, and your life habits and everything. So what you do is what's creating your genetic structure, and then your genes are a reflection of what you've been doing. And because what I've been doing is maintaining health and doing this, of course, my genes are going to be good. But, I mean, my father died of a heart attack when he was 63. So I'm already 10 years older than him, and I've got no heart problems at all. I didn't. You know, and when I was a teenager, I felt, you know, sometimes if I was working hard, I felt like I was having a little bit of a heart problem. I couldn't keep up with the other guys in the sports. After I got into yoga, that all changed completely.
Mm.
And now, again, I feel the vitality of a young man. And every day, the practice of yoga makes me feel everything in my body. Everything feels good every day.
Yeah.
And I keep checking in with that. So the genetic thing, as Bruce Lipton is pointing out, you can have some component of your genetic structure that is going towards a weak pancreas that can lead to diabetes. Mm. but you have to select that. Yeah. So there's a conscious psychological component here,
yeah,
which is going back to the mind and matter connection in yoga.
Yeah.
If you start thinking of yourself as being, well, you know, my father had diabetes, so maybe I'll have that. Well, my father died of a heart attack, so maybe I'm going to have a bad heart and my could stop any time.
Mm. Yeah.
So the mental attitude will connect to the genetic part that will create the problem you're expecting.
Yeah.
This is the yogic realization of mind-body medicine.
Yeah. I think listen to Joe Dispenza. So, you know, he's great in the neuroscience field and actually bringing, a lot of test data subjects and that sort of thing into this space. So the metaphysics and the actual science, you know, connects there. I think he said, you know, just generally maybe there's 5% that is a genetic outcome. But that was earlier on. And I think over time he's actually seen that it's much lower than that 5%. I attended one of his events in Germany, in Berlin, a week-long retreat. And there was a guy there that had had a stroke, and he'd had a stroke several years ago. So sort of some paralysis down the left side, so he would drag his leg a little bit, couldn't really pick his arm up and that sort of thing. By day 7, like, he had his arm perpendicular to his body. So, you know, modern medical science would say it's impossible. The brain's atrophied by that stage. You know, there's no way that, you know, this thing can turn back on again. So again, I think that's, you know, pushing against that boundary of what is actual genetics and what's this genetic, epigenetic process as a result of lifestyle choices and, you know, some of the practices that you teach. I thought that came to mind as well. David loves to bust moves on the dance floor. So tell us about ecstatic dance in relationship to health and healing.
Ecstatic dance is something we started doing here. And the form of yoga that I do is very tainted by my influence from Egypt, where the Egyptians were kind of dancing yoga. They had music and they knew about the breathing. And they had the same postures, and it's carved in stone in some of the temple walls, or used to be. And they were moving, breathing with music and doing all these poses. And that's where I started doing more of the dance-like yoga. In yoga, you have like the sun salutation, mm-hmm, which is a moving flow. Mm. It's not a posture. It's a bunch of postures woven together. So that's my style, and I have different routines.
Lost your sound for a while there. So sound just dropped out for a little bit. Can you talk again? I think maybe a connection thing from your... I'm getting a message here. Your internet connection is unstable. Can you hear me? Thumbs up if you can.
Yours? I can hear you okay, okay, and see you.
You're back on again sound-wise. So talking about Egypt and those movements that you've created.
Egyptian yoga, Egyptian yoga and the flows that I do, there's a way of breathing in or breathing out with each move you do. And when you do a half hour of this with the deep breathing, you feel pretty charged up.
Mm, mm.
And because you've been moving, your circulation is really alive and the oxygen that you're absorbing is getting to every cell in your body. And this is the style. So this goes into ecstatic dancing, where in the ecstatic dance that is happening here, there's 250 people who come here every Sunday to do this. And I quite often start off by saying, if you can keep your breathing deep and incorporate it with the motion, you not only get healthier, but you get high.
Mm, mm.
Your state of consciousness goes into ecstasy. This is why it's called ecstatic dance. You're freely dancing and moving. And if you add the breath to it, which is difficult, most people forget.
Mm.
You start moving, you're focused on the movement, and you completely forget to integrate the breath. It takes training. It takes effort and reprogramming of yourself and how you're moving and breathing. And when you get that, it becomes more automatic that you're moving, so you're going to be breathing more deeply. And if you do that for an hour, the dances are like, 2 to 3 hours long. If you're dancing and moving and breathing for that period of time, and you like the music as well, I mean, dancing is fun anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So it keeps you going, and it brings in, again, like this Egyptian style of yoga, which, I mean, you got to look at the Egyptians, and from what we know of modern research, they were around for a long time. The Sphinx has been sitting there over 12,000 years.
Yeah.
So this is a civilization and a culture that lasted thousands of years, multi-thousands of years. I suppose, look at the American Empire, it's falling apart after 200. Can't even hold it together.
Yeah.
So they were practicing. This is what the elite and nobility of the Egyptians were practicing yoga. This is how they attained their state of aliveness, their state of consciousness that could have a beautiful vision and create an empire that lasts and goes on from one generation to the next.
I'm just curious now on the historical side of things. So what's the link between Egyptians doing their stuff and then in India, them practicing yoga? Like, how did that bridge, or is there a bridge?
No, there's a bridge. And if you go to the museum up in north, even in Bombay, you can see the links between the artifacts that are there linking in. Some of them look very Egyptian, some of them look Persian, and some of them look Indian. There was connection and there was communication. And I mean, the Egyptians were doing this thousands of years ago. And the Hatha Yoga part with the postures and that is only recorded in India 1,000 years ago.
Okay.
Before that, it's more obscure. There's a lot of ancient texts about yoga and the mind and sound and different things, but the postures that are in stone in Egypt seem to have come later. But the Egyptians were totally aware of it. So, you know, we don't have really good history on any of this, because even the Egyptians and the archaeologists have got their heads buried in the sand over there.
Another big not subject pathway we could take.
Yeah.
I read some Greg Braden stuff, and, you know, he has a pretty good dig around in things and giving some different perspectives and stuff.
Yeah. Graham Hancock.
Yeah. One of the other subjects that I know that you teach this in your training, and you know, the style of yoga, you do chakra yoga. So we might talk a little bit more about that at the end as well. But this germ theory and terrain theory and that sort of thing. And I think, again, if your foundation piece is a little bit off, you know, everything that you build up on top of that is a little bit rickety. So I think been something that's been an interesting expose for more people now, becoming more aware.
If you have a book on the healing side of yoga, the Healer's Manual, which is part of the course I teach. And in the first chapter, in the introduction in the first chapter, I explain where modern medicine, when they first got into microscopes and they could see bacteria, they found bacteria where there was disease, and they started saying it's the bacteria's fault, which was a total mistake.
The blame game.
Yeah, it was a mistake. And then a whole of Western medicine was built on this mistake. And they didn't know about antibodies at the time. They couldn't see those yet.
Yeah,
but they could see bacteria. So they got half the picture and built this whole assumption and a whole pharmaceutical industry that's built on killing the bacteria, when they're not the problem at all. The disease is degeneration from the inside out, and bacteria show up where the cells are deteriorating.
Yeah,
but they don't cause the deterioration. So that now is known. And they're finding, well, actually, there's bacteria everywhere. It's the bacteria that make the soil, that creates the food. That means it's bacteria that help us digest the food in our stomachs. It's bacteria in our guts that's showing and teaching the white blood cells what to do, et cetera. It's all, the perception has changed considerably from the original 160 years ago when they discovered bacteria.
Yeah.
But people don't know that. People still think, oh, there's bacteria or there's virus. Well, this is nature's way of communicating information, of bringing in transformation and change in our internal environment, is through bacteria and virus.
Yeah.
They're communication devices more than anything.
Yeah.
And we're not looking at that side of it. This is science. This is modern science is showing us this, but medical science is still, I was still in the dark ages, yeah. really.
Well, it's still very profitable to continue doing yeah. that model. So,
well, that's just, it.
So I sort of think there will be divergent paths where there will be people that will go more the natural healing. Like, you know, you teaming up with that doctor and doing recovery work yeah. around cancer. So I think there'll be more and more. What was, you well, were telling me yeah. something happened in Thailand recently.
Yeah. I think I sent you a little link to that. There's the Minister of Health in Thailand wants to turn this island and the other two islands, there's three little islands in this cluster, and he wants to turn them into health havens using medicinal marijuana and alternative techniques to heal people and bring people internationally to this healing part of the world.
Bravo.
Well, it's brilliant because that's what we're doing here.
Bravo.
A lot of people on this island are alternative, and what I'm doing with this medical doctor and even Dr. T, who helped me do the DNA testing, he's alternative too and open-minded about all this. Yeah, we can show people how to be healthy instead of teaching them to be diseased and then selling them all these drugs for a lifetime because their thyroid is dysfunctional or something.
Yeah,
it's all changeable. You know, we need to re-educate ourselves about how to be healthy, how to maintain our own health as adults. We should have that responsibility.
Yeah.
We should be taught that responsibility.
What?
And not say, oh, if you get sick, it's not your fault. It's the bacteria.
Yeah.
What? I mean, to me, from my mind, as a yogi who understands how the mind works, and you look at civilization, everybody living in fear of an invisible microscopic little molecule in the shape of a virus. It's like we used to be, you know, afraid of tigers, you know.
Real things.
No. it's a joke.
Yeah,
it's a cosmic joke.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating. I see from my perspective, and I can imagine if you've been immersed in this thing for 5 decades, like the lens of perception you have on it, and you're just like, this is bizarre.
Yeah. It's bizarre. It's the belief system of humanity that's still in the dark ages. I mean, hey, wake up.
Yeah.
You know, everything has changed, even physics, as I was talking about quantum physics sometimes.
Yeah.
Quantum physics has revolutionized everything. What the world is made of is no longer atoms and molecules.
Yeah.
They are just made of energy vibrations. And what controls those vibrations is the same as your genetic thing. It's the epigenetic.
Yeah.
It's the influence of your consciousness that tells what the wave should become, an atom of what type and how it should form into a molecule. This is all according to our expectations. And we're not grasping this. And really, well, if I change my expectations, and Joe Dispenza will talk a lot about this. If I change my expectations, will my life change?
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Change my personality, I change my personal reality. Absolutely. I mean, I had a great experience because I was doing some fasting. Like I did a 5-day water-only fast. And the most fascinating thing for me was how untrue the thoughting at mind level is. I would have the thought, you know, I'd be riding the motorbike in Bali. I'd go past some warung. There'd be the smell of some fried food, you know, brains going, I need to eat, I need to eat. And then I check in with stomach and I say, do you need anything? And stomach's going, no, I'm loving the break here. Don't send me anything. Like, I'm really loving it. So you realize that perception of, I think something's real, but I check in for reality and it's not reality. And the thought I had, and that's what made it a spiritual experience, was how many other things am I believing at mind level that are 100% gobbledygook?
Yeah. Totally. So mind is directing so many things and influencing us with these expectations. And then, I mean, when you're riding your motorbike there and the mind comes up with an accident thought, because you just heard that your friend smashed their bike, all of a sudden you can smash your bike because this mind, this is on your mind, and you misjudge something and you have the accident that you were just thinking about.
Yeah.
It's not coincidence.
I mean, that's a big part of the work when you're doing the healing work with people is working around their belief systems. So what sort of stuff do you do around that and how do you shift those?
Oh, well, yeah, breathing techniques. One of them is called Ekadasi. I don't know if you've done that with Octavio.
Yep.
It's a breathing technique that takes you through a life review. And as they're doing the breathing day by day, the breathing is increasing their oxygen level day by day.
Yep.
But it's also having a psychological influence of digging into their subconscious to see what's been disturbing their consciousness, what's been influencing them. And they come up with memories that, oh, I'd completely forgotten about this, but I had this accident when I was small, and then my father got angry with me because of the accident and hit me, and da da da. So you trace back and you find these traumas that have happened to people, unrecognized as traumas until now. And once you realize, that's why I'm afraid of, I still got a bad relationship with my father. And this bad relationship is interfering with other relationships in my life, and I need to change this. And it's interfering with the mind-body connection and the glands and the organs, and it leads to a disease. And when you go back and far enough into the subconscious and pull these weeds out, the traumas that happened, the suppression that happened, the whatever sexual molesting that happened when you were 6 years old, all of these things lead to disease later on in life if you don't resolve the issues. This is, again, the mind-body connection. And we use these techniques to review people's lives and talk about, okay, what was it like when you first started school? What was that like? And by doing that, you realize, oh, there was a real bad attitude or something that happened that really twisted my perception of life at this time. And if you've done this enough times, there's a psychological aspect of it, and you can trace and see where the roots of the disease are. And if you pull the roots out, the disease is permanently gone, doesn't come back.
Yeah.
So this is a part of the healing process. And
yeah, because I mean, I get into the belief work with my clients, and I do this NLP stuff and that sort of thing. And there's a good description that I read in a book called Code to Join. It was saying that, as a child, an event seems like an asteroid strike. We look at it as, a 50-year-old and go, oh, that's a nothing. I remember working with a client, and the significant emotional event we got to is this person's got a matchbox with an insect in it. Apparently his mother and his brother were going off to town. He wasn't invited along. So he started this story of, I don't have any friends, no one loves me, and, I've only got this insect as my friend. So that starts building up this idea of, I'm not worthy the same as my... Like, it's fascinating how small, from our perspective, looking back. And once these things come to the surface, and once something's revealed, like, with Eureka Darcy, and someone gets to see the experience that created that, that's when the cards can start crumbling down. Just the illumination of that, like, oh, shit, I didn't realize I was heading off down this path because of a freaking grasshopper.
Yeah, so there it is. And people are waking up to this and becoming more aware, and the older generation that used to believe in discipline and hit your kids if they do something wrong, the younger generation don't really do that anymore. You realize, well, you hit your kids, it's a trauma.
Yeah.
To be hit by the parent who's supposed to be loving you and taking care of you, and they're beating you up. And it's like, okay, this doesn't work. This is what creates the trauma that's going to lead to a really bad life, a bad attitude, no friends, and all these things. So, and then disease.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if these things haven't been resolved. So.
And I think one point I'd sort of like to mention too is that there's no age too old to do this work as well. So what's been your experience with people being able to make change at any age of their life?
Well, my experience with the people who are older is sometimes they don't want to change. They can't. They're stuck in their habits. And I've had people come here for the cancer remission program because their children wanted them to come and heal. And after a few days of Ekadasi, they started talking about, what would I live for? My wife is a bitch. I have to listen to her all day long. I was asking this one guy, Mr. Tan, so what are you going to do with the next 10 years of your life? And he's just like, no, 10 years. No way. maybe a couple. I don't want to be here 10 years. He just wanted to get out of his situation.
Yeah.
And I realized here, this is important, is that he wanted to get out, so he created a disease to kill himself.
Mm.
And this is another. This is called the nocebo effect in medicine.
Yeah.
If you really are unhappy with your life, and this guy was only in his mid-60s or something. Yeah. He was younger than me.
Yeah.
But I'm enthused about life. I've got beautiful things to do. I travel, I have a beautiful young girlfriend. I like my daily life is fun all the time.
Yeah.
He was in a hell situation and wanted to get out.
Yeah.
And I've seen this in other people as well. And that's one of the first questions I ask people. If they're gonna come for the cancer remission program, I say, what do you want to live for?
Yeah.
What's the purpose? And
Yeah, and maybe their dharmic path is to, bow out, to, use their, expression and take their path, whatever that is.
So you can look at this terminal disease as a turning point where it's a knock on your door and you got to change your life. Or if you feel that your life is really shit and you just want to get out, then give in, accept that you have a terminal disease and leave.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the world's in a funny place at the moment because there is lots of that, despair, sense of powerlessness and all that sort of stuff. So it'd be interesting to see what's created out of this experience, just at a psychological level, aside from, whatever other stuff people are putting into their bodies, and we won't talk on that subject because that's a whole different subject, but just at a psychological level. I mean, I look here in Bali and kids are, wearing masks and they're only sort of a couple of years old, 2, 3, 4 years old. And I imagine the trauma that that's putting on them. And I see, just as one example, trust in life, that person becomes a 20-year-old who doesn't trust in life because they couldn't even trust the air they breathe. So they're not going to trust a relationship. They're not going to trust taking a job, or they're not going to trust, going into some sort of risk. They're going to be probably pretty risk adverse. Opportunities will come up. They'll shy away from because they won't trust. They won't even trust their own intuition. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see how the next 5, 10, 15 years evolve.
Yeah, we are being traumatized at the moment through public media and through all this stuff. And just wearing a mask is going to stop how well you can breathe.
Well, here's the topic of breathing as one of the key elements.
I mean, I can't wear a mask. I just feel like I'm suffocating. I can't breathe properly. And I watch everyone else is walking around accepting this is normal.
Yeah,
if you're not breathing anyway, I guess you wouldn't notice the difference. But if you are accustomed to breathing, you're as well, it's stopping the airflow.
Yeah.
And who knows what's the fibers in the mask and what's being released into your lungs.
Oh, yeah.
And you're sucking air through that.
Yeah. I've heard different circumstances. I think my sister was saying a colleague of hers that was a police officer and they were masked up for extended period of times and she was having lung issues and then they were finding fibers and all that sort of stuff. So, just a ridiculous one at the physiological level, but then also the psychological. So, and again,
and also, in Thailand, people were saying the land of smiles. Well, you can't see any smiles anymore.
Oh, tell me about it. People come
can't
to Bali.
See people, everybody's
people come to Bali for the smile. So, seeing now restaurants where the staff are no longer wearing masks. It's like there's this ray of light that's come out, like, these smiles like come out and they just elevate like something crazy.
Well,
don't get me started on the whole mask topic. Like it's been like a pain in my butt from day one. I never believed that for a second.
Frustrating to the point you get angry about it. Like, come on, wake up, people.
Finishing on happy notes, so we'll wrap up soon. And what I might do, David, is I might get you back down the track as well and we might have a part two. And I'll reach out to a few different people to see if there's different questions that people might specifically have and we'll bring those up in our next conversation. But I just wanted to touch base and, tap into this healing side of things. And, obviously David's used that as a modality. So, David, you know, and I'll put in the show notes, Pyramid Yoga is the yoga center in Koh Phangan that David has created. Online, there's chakra yoga, and that's the yoga style of teaching. And, you know, I've been along to a couple of the workshops of David where he goes deep dive on the chakra work, and it's absolutely fascinating and fantastic. So, you know, if you're interested in diving deeper in the relationship of yoga and three chakras, that's the place to go. And keep an eye out for the what are you calling it, cancer remission or cancer recovery or cancer, what's the?
Cancer remission program. Find it on the website. The Chakra Yoga website has that and a few testimonials and whatnot.
Fantastic.
But I reflect and repeat Swami Gitananda's thing of, there's no such thing as an incurable disease.
Yeah.
It's all fixable. We just don't know how to work with the human body.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the other absurdities is, you know, if you take your car into a mechanic and say it doesn't start, it's not working, can you fix it? Well, he'll fix it and it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
You go to a doctor, you say, my thyroid's not working. Oh, well, sorry, but it's never going to work again. You got to cut it out.
Well, it'll work better, but it'll have this side effect.
Yeah, they don't know how to repair the human body. They've been taught that it's unrepairable.
Yeah,
it breaks down and that's it. We gotta intervene and put in chemicals for you and replace your, give you a different heart maybe.
Yeah, pretty bizarre. Pretty bizarre. And again, that's a big topic, and there's a big rabbit hole to wander down there. Yeah. And I think I was reading something the other day, and it was like, go along to your doctors and challenge them with a question. You know, how can I make myself healthy, vital, vibrant, and that sort of stuff, and see whether the doctor actually knows how to do that as opposed to, you know, treating illness.
Yeah.
Fascinating. So David's going to be touring and traveling and doing some different things. Are you doing any public events? Like, as you told me, you're going to go to Mongolia for a bit, and then you're going to go to a couple of other locations. Are you planning on taking a group back to Egypt? Because that's something that fascinates me. So,
oh, well, I hadn't thought about that, but
in the future.
But yeah, in the future. For now, I'm going to London and from London to Egypt. And I might stop in Cyprus because I got teachers there who always welcome me back. But it's more, I have people there that I do workshops. They arrange and gather some of the people who are interested in this. And then I talk about these things.
So are you doing some workshops in Egypt? I'm not in Egypt, in England?
Yeah, London.
Okay, let me know, and I'll put some dates out, and I might even pass it on my newsletter and let people know if they're over England way to keep an eye out for you.
Yeah, I can send you a flyer on the workshops.
Yeah, that'd be some awesome. If you send me that after this call, and I'll put a link in the show notes anyway to your website so people can find out details. But I might send it out to my newsletter to let people know that if they're over Bonnie England way to check out one of your workshops.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Awesome. Absolute pleasure as always talking to David. And
it's
you've
fun.
Got this lightness, vibrancy about you. One time we might have a conversation and go into some of the rabbit holes and that sort of stuff. I'm fascinated about some of that, and I think some of my listeners would be interested in seeing your perspectives, having been on the planet the time you have, and having been in the space and place. And also, like, I'd like a little bit of a dive around the consciousness as well, relationship of consciousness, mind and body. I think that'd be quite fascinating as well.
Yeah, that's a good one that people don't explore much.
Yeah, yeah.
Very important in the overall picture of things. And a big significant part of yoga is to recognize that you're not your mind. You are the conscious observer of the mind.
Mm.
And you can be in the state of consciousness without the mind. And we call that peace of mind.
Yeah.
You can just get the thing to shut up.
Yeah. And again, and then build from your life on that foundation. It's a completely different foundation than some other belief that takes you off in a different direction. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you, everyone, for listening in and tuning in. And if you do have any specific questions that you might like to bring to David for next time, let me know. And again, I'll have stuff down in the show notes to let you know a little bit more about what David's up to and how to get in touch with him. So Thank you so much again for your time, David. It's a pleasure as always, and I look forward to seeing you in person at some point in the future. At a time unknown.
Without a mask.
Yeah. I'll be giving you a big man hug. So have a fantastic day, David, and safe travels.
Yeah.
And thank you again for your time.
Okay.
Awesome. And that.
Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time.
Terrific. Thanks, everyone. See you later. Well, actually, I forgot to do my finish. My finish is normally wherever you are on this gorgeous, beautiful, incredible planet of ours. Have an absolutely fantastic day and take care. Okay, now it's a wrap.